Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Good day, and welcome to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Reiki Master and host Phyllis Lei Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto from Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. This month, December, is a month that has been very special for me. And I have dedicated December to stories of masters from Hawaii about and concerning Hawaii Otakata. Hawaii Otakata, as most of you know, was the woman who found Reiki in Japan in the 1930s, brought it to the islands of Hawaii for many, many years, and then eventually was introduced to the mainland of the United States and taught mostly, interestingly enough, in the San Francisco area, the Chicago area, and also in southern British Columbia, Canada. Last week, we had a woman, Inger Drogue, who used to live in Nelson, British Columbia, and was a student of Wanya Tuan. The week before that, I had on Rick Bachner, who was also initiated in this area and is a good friend, colleague of Wanya Tuan. And it was to her house that Rick went in order to take his first degree Reiki. So through the whole series, actually, of interviews for the last 18 months, Wanya's name has popped up many, many times. And now, luckily, we have the person herself, Wanya Tuan. And I met Wanya in 1979 when I was traveling with my grandmother, Hawaii Otakata, and went to her house in Cherryville and in her weaving studios attended and watched several classes of Hawaii Otakata as she taught these people in British Columbia. And one of the members of this group, Jan Bryant, whom Rick also mentioned, told me that I had had a past life with all these people and that I was coming home. And eventually I moved to British Columbia for a few years. And it was and has always been a spiritual homeland for me and certainly a place where I was nurtured as a baby Reiki master, and Wanya was one of my great teachers and sisters in some way. So welcome, Wanya. I'm so happy to have you on the show today.
Thank you very much, Phyllis. It's nice to be here talking about your grandmother and my Reiki master.
Yes. Wanya, as I do with everyone, I'd love for you to describe where you were and what it was like when you first met Hawaii Otakata.
Yeah. Well, I was here in British Columbia, and I lived on a farm at the time. Yeah, like Phyllis said, I had a weaving school, and a lot of people came by. And Rick Bachner's friends had been weaving at my place. So they dropped by once, and had been at the retreat somewhere. And he said to me, I have a telephone number here for you that you might be interested in. It's about healing. I don't know what it is, but here's the number. It's in your area, so go ahead and try it out. It would be good, probably something you'd be interested in. So I took the number, and I went around and thought about it. And well, finally, one day I phoned and asked about what it was called, and they said it's called Reiki and this and that. And then I asked, how much does it cost? And she said $125, and that, and then a voice in the background said, and that's American money. I thought, now who's that? So before I saw Mrs. Takara, I heard her voice in the background. Anyway, eventually, it's a long story, but eventually I ended up there a few days later on this Reiki course. And I was sort of in the last minute. My son drove me over, and we got up exactly 7:30 when it was due to start. And I knocked on the door, and I heard somebody calling from the side of the house, come in, come in. And I opened the door, and just then, down the stairs, every time I think of that moment, it sort of catches in my heart somehow.
Yeah,
anyway, in that moment,
this
beautiful woman came down with sort of a silver-colored hair and a blue Hawaiian dress with pink, white, and yellow flowers down the side. And she just looked at me, and she said, I know you would come. And I just felt very strange because I thought, I don't know about this. How did she know that? I mean, I've never seen the woman. I just made up my mind today that I was able to go. How did she know I was going to come? And then she just smiled very sweetly, and people in the room, they didn't know Takata come down, which was so quiet. They called, come in, come in. And I said, okay. And she said, yeah, come with me. And we walked into the room together. but for a moment, I thought, no, this is too strange. I don't know about that. How did she know this? But I trusted after I heard her speak that night, and she started by going into the room, and she said, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Reiki. Thank you for coming. And then she started to talk about Reiki. It was very special, very special.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It was a sort of a stunning thing to have her look at me like that. It was like we knew each other from 1,000 years back, but it was too strange in my head to process it all.
Uh-huh.
I would just drop it and walk in with her and sit down and do it. Yeah, it was the first meeting.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing it. And do you remember you must remember things in your first degree class, like she was very practical and matter-of-fact about that part, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I know. She was very right on the dot. You know, I had been told it was 4 sessions, about 2 hours each, and so on and so forth. Okay. And I asked if I needed to know anything particular. No, everything is fine. She made people understand everything fine. And no, you didn't have to be spiritually advanced. No, you didn't have to know all about the body, all those type of things. And I said, okay, I'll just go with what you have to teach. And I watched carefully. She kept saying, watch my hands, watch my hands. And I thought, yeah, because I'm a weaver. I know you have to watch your hands. You have to know exactly each thread, even if it's 2,000. You have to know how to deal with it. You can't skip anything. You have to have it just so in order to get the pattern. So I knew that it was very important where she put her hands and watched them. Because tendency people look in her eyes, looked at her talking. She was very fascinating. Because we are sort of taught to watch people while they talk. But she said, watch my hands, watch my hands. Yeah, and as soon as there was a little, when she was all over and finished for the first session, she just said, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and we see you at whatever time it was the next day. And she bowed and went out a little bit backwards, and then next minute you saw her in an apron, and she was out in the kitchen chopping away food, you know, and that was it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, very good.
Right. And what is it that you feel like you received from her in the first degree?
Oh, that was a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to... first of all, the Reiki, of course. And then she said, Reiki will teach you. So then I knew that I didn't need to ask any questions, and they'll come up as the course continued, like the next evening and so on. And she said, the first evening, I talk about the history. The next evening, I talk about this, and then the next part. So she had it on, don't ask anything beyond that until I have covered that subject. Then you may ask about it. So I thought, okay, I'll just patiently wait till she has said what she intends to say over the 4 evenings, and then I'll know it because she said so. Yeah.
That's wonderful. And did you know it at the end of the 4 evenings?
I guess I was fortunate then that I could stay in the daytime now and then, because it was over 4 evenings and there was other things going on in the day. Some of the people tented out and so on.
Uh-huh.
And of course, was held at Barbara Brown's, and I could go home eventually with somebody. So I had an opportunity to to watch her, how she was. There was a couple with some children and so on, and how she looked at those when they were playing. And then the mother asked a question about her children in the evening, and then she'd just say, oh, yes, it was this, 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 and then this. And I thought, yeah, because I saw she looked in a certain way at that child as she had an x-ray vision, and she looked right through her, just sort of casually as that child was running past.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, yeah, mm-hmm. she knew how to do that, you know, and that's how she knew what was going on in people's bodies and so on. And I just watched how what she was doing throughout the day. She was sat in the chair and her appeared to be just sort of lounging and drinking tea
mm-hmm.
with people under a nice little shady bush there. Yeah. So that was very good. I was lucky to just have that dance to be in.
Uh-huh. And then you decided that you wanted to host her at your weaving studio. Was that the next time that you saw her after that?
No. In the first class, she said, she told me I would make a nice, good teacher. And I said, well, Mr. Carter, I have a lot of things. I was having 5-6 kids and animals and a weaving school and a newspaper and being part of the people deciding on potholes in the road and logging up the mounting on their wells and things like that. So
yeah.
I thought, I can't take on anything else. After the first course, she already said that. And then when I took the next course, it came in the spring, and by the end I had saved up money to take for my oldest son and my two daughters, who were 8-something. So they could do that course. And when I got there, she never mentioned exactly how much the next course was. I just presumed it was the same as the first one. When that happened, it was like, oops, in the last minute I found out. And when she got up to Barbara's, I found out before we went. But somebody has sent me money for weaving courses. Sometimes they sent the whole fee at once rather than just $25 for the
uh-huh.
fee. So it was there, and we went, and I paid it, and I said, Mr. Carter, here's my son Eric and my daughters Annalie and Christina, and they'd like to have the Reiki as well. Okay, so that's what happened. And then she said again that I should think about it. And that actually, while that course was still on, there was a woman in my weaving course that wasn't well, and I gave her a treatment. And a few days later, she wrote me a letter. I told her I could send you healing now because I'm taking this course. And this was the last night of the course, the second degree course. I sent her the first time, and she was in Victoria, and I was up in a whole day's trip or further away. And a few weeks later, I got a letter from her saying it felt so wonderful to lay in my bed in the morning and feel this warmth going through my body, just as it did when you gave me a treatment in your home when I was there. And
wow.
I thought, so that's when Mr. Carter already said, well, I want to come back and make you a Reiki master. And I didn't say anything. And I thought, well, I'm not going to say anything. I sort of just humored the old lady. Exactly what I decided to think, because I didn't know what to think. Or just my brain stopped. But when I got that letter, that's what I thought. If this is what Reiki can do, then I can't justify teaching more people weaving. There are other people that I've taught in the community. I'll take them on as apprentices for the rest of the time of the season, and then next year they can teach, and then I'm free. Because there's a lot of people waiting for a couple of years or more, 2-3 years to come and weave. But
uh-huh.
this is more important. And Mrs. Takata said now 3 times to me, you would make a good teacher, you would make a good teacher in Reiki. And I couldn't see it at the time. I mean, I could see it, but I couldn't see what happened to the life I was having, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was so much. I was involved in everything. So I thought, well, she knows better than I do, so what can I say? I can't say no. I can just stand there and wait and see what comes. And he said, oh, I'll write you, when she left. And then September came along, and I'm having my weaving courses. And Barbara Brown phones me one day and asks, did you get the letter from Takara? And I said, no, not yet. My mail doesn't come as often as yours. And she said, well, she's written you. And she's coming to make you a Reiki master. And I said, when is that going to happen? Well, it sounds like she's coming in 2 weeks. And I said, what? I'm not ready. I told her that. I don't have the money. I have all these responsibilities, and this and that. I don't mind doing it, but well, she's coming. And I said, Barbara, the only thing I could do is to write that letter so we can have a course. And, yeah, and she says, she will make me a Reiki master, too. And I said, well, that's wonderful. And so do you have people for the course? And she said, no, we just got to know that this is happening. I said, well, I know a lot of people. So I start tonight. I'll send out a whole bunch of letters because I had a Gestetner machine. Printed them out, 60 or so. I looked at the people who had been weaving and what they were talking about, and they might be interested. And they can certainly not do all the same weekend. So we had 2 weekends. So we were going to do hers first and then mine, and eventually that got shifted around. So some of those people that couldn't make it, they could come to her course. So that worked out great. That's all we could do, and I didn't know. There was no time in those days to get the answer back because we did a long-distance stamp and everything, letters, and it took a long time. So I didn't know how many was going to come, and at least I thought there's going to be a Reiki course, Mr. Takara, at my place. And that happened. And, I was surprised, and she was surprised, and everybody was surprised. About 35 people showed up. Some of them had their kids with them, their goat, dogs, cats in some cases, because they couldn't leave them. They came a long way. Some drove a couple of days. So we had all these people. That was quite funny. Yeah, so that's how that happened. And that's when she made me a Reiki master. And when she started the course, the people asked, was there anything more to Reiki than she really intended to do? And she said, well, yeah, there is. There's actually a second degree course. And they said, well, how do we do that? And she said, well, that has to do with distant healing and so on. Somebody said, well, we came a long ways, Mrs. Takara. Some of us drove for a couple of days, and then we're a couple of days back, and we have all the things going on at home. So now we are here. Can we do it all now? And she looked at everybody around, and she said, well, she felt they were very special people. They were very back to the land and independent and very capable people. So she decided, yes, I can let you do the first and the second now when I'm here. And they all agreed that that was good. So 10 people decided to do their first and second degree. So that was half of my Reiki master fee right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the people, then she looked around and said, there's a lot of children here. And I thought, what do we do? They had to take them along. And everybody just shrank a little bit, thinking they couldn't have kids along, you know, that they might disturb them or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, children over 4 or 5 years old, they do very well with Reiki. It's very good for them in school. It makes them very smart. So then several parents decided, okay, we'll do it all at once. And that's what happened. It was a big class. And, when that was over, my whole Reiki master fee was practically done. There was a few people that went over to Barbara's place that was considered my people. And that was the end of the $10,000 American, which was $12,500 Canadian in those days.
I threw
in some of my food money for the winter because I thought, oh well, something will come up, which it of course did after. So that was that. And I didn't have to think about that anymore. So she knew what she was doing.
Didn't
anything stop it. Yeah, so that's how that went.
What a wonderful story.
Yeah. Was
well, she used to say, let Reiki teach you, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you just have to listen to your inner, or to Reiki, to the energy.
So you've taken on a kind of a philosophy that's very interesting for me. About really having your family involved in Reiki. So are all of your children now Reiki masters?
The children are. Yeah, that's right. I was thinking my grandchildren because we're right down to them now.
Well.
Yeah, well, they travel with me. And as soon as I found out, I mean, after I used it for a while, the neighbors and everybody said, what do you do with your chickens? And how come your cows look so shiny and this and that? And I said, I give the food some Reiki before I throw the wheat to the chickens. I give the Reiki, of course, hold my hands and hold my hands over them. And sure, I noticed they didn't look as scruffy as they sometimes do. in the spring, you know, and things like that. And then, of course, when I noticed that Buddhist Takata came back, there were definitely my kids that were home at the time could take the course, you know, and they did, and then it becomes natural for them. And a lot of things they have realized now when they're getting up mid-30s and so on, they are realizing that, oops, I guess we did have a lot of miracles, but they're taking it for granted. But when they compare with other people's lives, and we credit that to Reiki, when people ask them, well, this and this, and people sort of look, and is that what happened? And they said, yeah, it's like, doesn't that happen to you? Doesn't your life go like that? But it doesn't quite. It went quite different. So they realized, but when you have it all the time, you don't know any difference. But when you start getting older and notice it, there was a big change. You know, showing up the Reiki, so to speak.
So, what do you feel? Let's see. How can I say this? I'm just wondering what your understanding now is of being a Reiki master. Sometimes people think that being a Reiki master is just being a teacher of Reiki. And I wonder if that's your opinion or your experience or if it's something different.
No, you have to be a person as well. You have to sort of work on your personship, so to speak. You know, like right now I decided, okay, like Mr. Takata said, first yourself, you know, you have to look after yourself, and then your family, of course, and then your mother and father, and then comes your neighbors and your friends. So I have been coming and going so much during these 30 years, and now I thought, okay, now I have been a little bit neglecting of my neighbors, for example. So then I thought, okay, now I have to be home. It used to be when I come home, everybody was so happy. Oh, you're home, you're home. This and that. And then after a while, they realized they couldn't keep saying, how long are you staying? It got a bit awkward because sometimes you weren't going to stay. You were leaving quite quick. And then they realized they didn't say that anymore. And now when I'm home, people come up and say, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you're here. So each person, we all contribute to something in the community just by our presence, whether we're Reiki masters or just hang around or work hard at some other thing or do nothing. Whatever, we are a part of that particular flower bed, you know. We are part of a big bouquet of some sort, and if there's a few missing or a great big group and then when it gets really cold and so on, that is quite noticeable in smaller places. This is a sort of a microcosm of life, and if we can somehow have a happy life and sit back and think, wow, this is like Garden of Eden, you know, lots of us do that here. Even if there's sad things and sickness and so on happening, we still have that feeling, wow, you know, like now I'm looking out at incredible mountaintops. They're totally white, and the snow is shining, and there's a cloud beneath it over the lake. It's quite special. We have to fulfill that part as well. We have to live our life as well as we can, and then be Reiki masters at the same time. That's the job, sort of thing. Seems funny, but you know, like a travel and salesman job, they can be home only so long. But you have to look after. You have to catch up on your neighbors. And I'm not good at baking, but at least I promised a fruit salad to the next happening. I'm not home to keep my stuff in order. It's a low priority, but I thought I don't do something that doesn't need cooking. But I haven't been here to do those things for a long time. Then I can't expect it to be done for me later on either when I might need it.
Right, exactly.
So that's really important to me to catch up on that type and make decisions. Should they have a plan here or should they leave unplanned, you know? All that stuff needs to be attended to. At least to have an all-around life.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd be like a workaholic sort of. And it's really hard not to because there's a great need for Reiki out there. That's why we have Reiki masters. My Aunt Lee was traveling with me, and when she was 16, I realized she would be a good helper. And that's when you initiated her with me up in Sweden there. And then we traveled, you know, to various places, Australia and Finland and Denmark and all over the place. And did it, and it was great to have her helping and thereby learning it as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and then her kids now are, the oldest is 20, and he just came back here to help me with a wood stove and stuff and shovel snow. It just finished up. So it goes there, you know. So then it's time for them to help out. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to compile a little book about letters about Reiki that I've gotten over the years and about the card and so on.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so that's what we're sort of intending when he came.
Oh, that's a nice project. Well,
yeah.
Wanya, you've written a compiled one book, I think, and written a couple of other books, one about your life.
Yeah.
That was about, what's the name of it? Just something about a distant star?
Yeah, exactly. In the Light of a Distant Star. Yeah,
that's a beautiful book. And what was the book that you just published about Hawaii Takata?
Yeah, that was it's called The Memories of Hawaii Takata. That was in 2005. And I did all those videos, and I was starting to get a bit worried that they might get old. And then Annalise said one day, I'll look through them and I could transcribe them onto text and we could do something.
Oh.
So that's what she did, and put other little things, maybe little articles somewhere or other I had written when I was asked to, and they are in there as well.
Uh-huh.
So,
that's beautiful.
So Annalise,
and where can people access these?
The first one was gone in a flash. I think I had 2,000 copies. And the Annalise, I think we had 1,000. They're sort of nearly run out, but we sort of reconsider that to do more with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, well, I should do this one here because I had all these letters and it's so nicely written and people put this time in to say what they think about Reiki and so on. I thought that should be preserved too for the future. Now there's more and more, but those are the beginning years.
Uh-huh.
Just going to do that into a booklet as well.
Uh-huh.
But Jeffrey will be putting that together, I guess. I'll find the stuff in boxes. So in the meantime, I wrote another book. Just only said we have to continue the first one, but the letters that I found or whatever information I had there wasn't continuation, but it was other things, and it's stories about life. And obviously, because I was traveling with Reiki, I saw a lot of things that has to do with more what can happen in life, what questions people have.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sort of working on doing more. I think Anli has an email thing that's called Two Twans. Very good at that. I'm not good at
it's
that.
The letter
first,
two,
I just want to get
it's
it.
The number two, Two Twans?
Yeah, exactly. I just want to get it written down on paper, and then I, you know, I'm getting old and I want to have it sort of down. I see what it says there. No, that's not right.
Well, I just tell the listeners that if you are interested in any of Wanya's publications, you can email me, and the email address is on the website, and then I'll forward it to Wanya somehow through Annalie, or maybe you will have your own email eventually sometime.
Yeah, I had it, and then it was too much, and I decided to just take these 2 years off and just do the go visit the neighbors and things like that.
Yeah,
catch up on that part. Now I feel I've done, and might have I have my own email, should be vanyat@hotmail.com.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a station break right now. We'll be back with more of Wanya Twan. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
What I Want to Be When I Grow Up by Johnny Mike.
Dad, it's John. I got the promotion. We'll call him John Jr.
You'll speak over 500 million words in your lifetime, but none of them will be as important as the words you use to tell your 6-year-old he has cancer. CureSearch.org connects you to the most comprehensive research and advice on childhood cancer and to other families who know exactly what you're going through. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel. Brought to you by CureSearch and the Ad Council.
Are you ready to enter the Psychic Cafe? Most of us believe in the healing power of meditation, but how can we fit it into our daily lives? What are our spirit guides trying to tell us? What are chakras, and what secrets do they hold in our lives? Are there really ghosts? Should we be afraid of them? These questions and more will be explored in the Psychic Cafe with host Mary Salpe, a renowned psychic and medium. Here to help you, the Psychic Cafe. Heard Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the 7th Wave Network.
Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn. So follow their lead. Take simple everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at foreignlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Forimoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I have the great pleasure to be talking with Wanya Tuan. She's one of my Reiki sisters in the sense that she and I were both initiated by Hawaii Takata as Reiki masters. I spent a lot of time with Wanya in British Columbia. She's one of the few people I know in the world who does not have a driver's license. And so some of us who do have driver's licenses have the great gift of accompanying Wanya to different places. And during these times, especially when I was in 1980, when I was trying to find myself as a Reiki master, she and I traveled around a lot in cars, and I learned a lot. One of the things that is one of my favorite stories about Wanya is that I used to go up every, I don't know, was it Thursday night or something, when we did a healing circle. And her girls at that time were in their preteen years, and we would sit in her living room in this circle, and there would be like between, I would say, 8 and maybe 14 people in this circle and sending Reiki to different people. And in the middle of all this, her girls would like come in, bang the door, yell at their mom that they wanted something to eat, or they'd run upstairs, turn on the TV, and there would be some gangster movie on. And eventually I asked Wanya if you know, we could have some privacy, you know, while we were doing our Reiki. And she said, turned to me and she said, "We don't have time to be holy and spiritual. You just have to do it whenever you and wherever it happens. And just don't pay any attention to them. They're doing their thing and we can do our thing." And that's kept me in good stead over all these years. I don't know if you remember this, but it was one of my big moments back in 1980.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was quite a few people expecting us to have a lot of little candles and everything nice and clean and white, you know. But it wouldn't have worked. We would never have time to do it then, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody was busy raising children, gardening, cooking, being community members and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And so speaking of gardening and cooking, my grandmother had a few interesting recipes that people have been really interested in. And interestingly enough, I mean, what I have found about the teachings of Hawaii Otakata is that, you know, I would sit and listen in her classes and go, I don't know about this. This just sounds so far-fetched. Now there are juice bars everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in Moscow, in Europe, in everywhere in the United States, that people are finding that raw juice is healthy. I mean, Hawaii Otakata used to tell everyone to eat her drink her blood juice. That was Wanya has the recipe, and she'll tell you in a few moments. And I used to have to fix it and carry it around for her and drink it because when I accompanied her, of course, I had to be healthy too. And that was probably the worst part of hanging out with her, was drinking these juices.
Yeah.
Wanya has the recipes, which is really good. Listeners, get your pens and paper and listen up.
Yeah, the reason why I got written down was that she used to say that you don't take any notes. So during the classes, you're not allowed to take notes. But one of my students, she took notes when Dakota was there, and after, in the evening, she got herself a new diary, so she figured it should be okay to write in the evening before she went to bed what she remembered of the day. So this is what she got down here. One grapefruit with white on it. You just peel the yellow off. One nice beet. That's a red beet. One heaping tablespoon of chopped almonds. That's about six or so. Three tablespoons of sunflower seeds. One cup raw cabbage. And she was thinking the white cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
So you chop that up and you put it in a blender. Add distilled water to make 1 quart of liquid. And put all into a blender and liquefy. Then she used to put it in five baby bottles because that's the only containers they had in those days that were suitable to travel with. And she drank one cup a day in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Then she recommended a green drink, which was parsley, cucumber, and pineapple juice. And you can also use comfrey. Well, there's another recipe here. And as for pneumonia, it says, use the blood of a carp fish. Now, this is in the book about memories of Hawaii Takara. And when Anneli was typing this out, I said, I think we don't bother with that last one. It sounds too strange.
Definitely.
I don't want to defend that to anybody. So there's enough information going into this book anyway, so maybe we don't take that. And Anneli looked up at me and said, I don't really want to change anything Ms. Takara says, but we'll read it later on when we're finished with everything. And I said, okay. So the next day or two later, when she's still typing out things, I got this idea that I have to go down and buy a newspaper, and it was going to be the Vancouver Sun, not necessarily that day because it takes a day before it gets here, but whatever they had, I was supposed to get that one and go home and read it. So I go home then and think, okay, I have a cup of tea and I sit and read the paper. And then I come to page 27. And it's October the 3rd, 2004. So this is while she is writing the book. And it says, UBC, which is University of British Columbia, celebrates unlocking carp's secret. champagne bubble at the University of BC Zoology Lab. A scientist celebrated the discovery of a secret trick used by fish to live without breathing. Scientists and anglers have long known that the crucian carp, which lives under ice and snow-covered ponds in Scandinavia, had a special respiratory system. It can live up to 4 months without oxygen. And there's a man named Stesic had been featured in the October issue of the journal Science for his study into how the fish pulls it off, which could have implication for people. Maybe one day we'll be able to make a human heart work the same way, he said. if you think about heart transplant, you only have a couple of hours to transplant the heart from the donor to the recipient. If you could somehow extend that time period, you'd have more hearts to give to people who need them. Hopefully, people will see this research and be inspired to exploit the abilities of this fish. Desik was so intrigued by the carp, he went to Norway and climbed into a fishing boat. For 3 weeks, he studied the fish. This is from the news from the Canadian press of that day. So I went into the other room and I said, Andy, forget it, keep it all in, whatever it says to Mrs. Takata, leave it. We may not understand it now, but eventually science will prove her right.
Right, exactly. So what's the rest of the recipe for the carp thing?
Yeah, no, that was it. That was just take the blood of a carp.
That's it?
Just squeeze, I guess, you get it out of the lake and you squeeze it.
So okay, all those pneumonia, this is it.
Now, when people are used to little white pills, they're not going out and try fishing carp and squeeze the blood
right.
out.
Well, that's here. What they need their family, right?
Yeah, so the science are here. Like Takata, you say, Reiki is an energy science, you know? There
uh-huh.
is a science, and here's one. There's all kinds of little scientific things coming. Yeah.
Right. Well, uh-huh. you know, she used to prescribe treating the side of your neck for blood pressure.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was so weird. And then in 1985, I think, when Michael, my husband at the time, was going to school in Fresno, he was doing research. He was in psychology, and he was doing research on different stuff having to do with blood pressure and psychological effects of so-and-so, and I don't know what he was doing. But anyway, they had just discovered that there was a kind of valve or something in the artery and veins in your neck
mm-hmm.
that controls or at least affects blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And he came home and he said, you just wouldn't believe what I found out. So I don't know where she, I assume that her training with Dr. Hayashi in Japan,
mm-hmm.
but maybe also just in her years and years and her hundreds and thousands of treatments,
yeah.
that these were things that she noticed and
mm-hmm.
accumulated knowledge about.
Mm-hmm.
And here science is validating all of these crazy things that
yeah.
I used to think, well, I don't know where she got that, but it couldn't
yeah.
possibly be true.
Yeah, but that's just it. I mean, she keeps saying Reiki will teach you, you know.
Yeah.
And it is a science, energy science. So the people to unlock it then. I mean, gosh, I sat on an airplane somewhere along the line and read a magazine that was called Health. And that was July, August of 2002. And
uh-huh.
it's in English, so it's more than likely an American paper.
Uh-huh.
And here's this little thing there. At the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine Policy, there's a Dr. James Gordon. He said, alternative medicine emphasizes self-awareness and self-care and is well-suited for the home. Now, this is the White House in the United States of America. This the news comes from in 2002. And
amazing.
He suggested that people try a hand at one of these four practices in the privacy of your home. Hypnosis, reflexology, and the third one is Reiki. The last one is acupressure. Now,
amazing.
About Reiki, it says, it sounds hokey, but this Japanese healing technique claims that the hands possess energy that can reduce anxiety. A Reiki follower might simply hold the hands an inch away from your head for several minutes to cure a headache and for more healing tips, etc., etc. So now if the government, the official spokesmen, are already saying, try it. I don't know what it is, but go ahead and try it. I think in particular in the United States, where you still don't have such good medical coverage that we do here up in Canada, eh? You know,
yeah.
it could be quite the difference to have Reiki in your hands, You know, it's worth the first degree anyway to go out because your insurance is a whole lot more than the first degree Reiki is. And even the second degree would be very worthwhile to have to all the listeners.
Yeah.
That's a good insurance in your home, in your own home, like they say here. You can sit at home and do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, she always used to say that her greatest wish was to have Reiki be a household word.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it has become. I mean, gosh, look how many people around the world that has Reiki. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. I'm sitting and looking in boxes to see what we have here. And it's been thrown in boxes over the years. It's a little bit scrambled, and I'm looking, and I think, good gosh, it's like 30 years now, and all the changes that has been, you know, from the beginning. Yeah, it's amazing. It's really, truly amazing how far it's gone across the world.
Mm-hmm.
How people have been helped by it, and sort of brightened. Like my friend, who was a school teacher, and I said, "Oh, Mrs. Takata, well, you know, I have a hard time describing her. She's like a big light. I can just see light when I look at her. She could hardly see Mrs. Takata. It was just like a big light. So she really had to focus." But the first class, you know, it was the second class we took at Barbara Brown's when my girls were there too. It was amazing.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And yet my sister would say, oh, I like Mr. Carter. She's very practical, detailed. She's not one of those holier-than-thou people and this and that. No, she's a very practical woman. She cooks and does things and punctual. And she thought that's a great thing, business-like, more business-like. So, I mean, they were the same class. They were the same time, the same person. I mean,
very different perspectives, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. So, do you have a favorite Hawaii Takata story?
Okay.
Or sometimes people just have a story that they tell all the time in their classes, or a kind of treasured memory kind of story.
There were some various difficult. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's the one. No, there's different things. It was very abrupt, and I think that we got that on the tape. And somebody asked her what she was talking about when you work over the ears. You put a finger in your ear of the person's ear, if there's a, you know. And then somebody said, what finger? And then she said, well, you can't put the thumb in, can you? And how many fingers? Oh, how many things fit in an ear? She was very abrupt, and that could seem unfriendly or uncaring, but I think after 40 years of listening to all kinds of questions, you know, you think, oh, my gosh. But that's a funny one. It sounds quite funny the way she's putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that was from the course in Grey Creek when Rick became a Reiki master.
Right. Well, one of the things that I really also very much appreciated about her teaching is that it was very, she just said, use your common sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that seems like that's kind of where she came from. And she got very impatient with people who were not, what she felt like was not using their common sense.
Yeah. And then also when she talked about the foundation treatment, as she called it, where to put your hands around the stomach area and for. And as she used to talk about people treat their stomach like a garbage can, she'd say, oh, well, you know, you sit down with a cup of coffee and then you have some ice cream with that. And then you might go up and have an orange and you think, go to the fridge and have a glass of milk. And you think nothing of it. And everybody sort of like, think nothing of what? You know, it's sort of like they take it for granted, they don't think at all.
Right.
Like the combination of about ice cold things and hot coffee, what does that do to your body? Oh, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
And the orange and the milk, the combination there, oh, yeah, right. So then you start realizing we are at our own fault if we don't watch how we eat and what we eat and when we eat. And that's what she had observed over all these years. And no wonder people had all kinds of things wrong with their stomachs and so on. Because they never stopped to think what they're putting in their mouth at any given time. And that's why she had those recipes that she came up with and what was good for older people and so on. Because in those days, people used to eat a lot of things out of cans.
Yes, exactly.
And now they are more into fruit and and raw things and salads and whatnot. But at that time, they hadn't quite got there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, she was quite direct. Yeah, no, that was funny things.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really interesting because when, in the last years, of course, there is always this great debate about whether or not Reiki masters should be selected by their master or whether or not it's something that comes from them. And it's an interesting discussion because I found sometimes that she would be direct with some people, like she was with you. Mm-hmm. And then there are other times when she would just say, well, let's watch and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I found that to be very interesting. And I'm just wondering what your practice has been and is now, and how do you find it, or is it very individual and it's hard to make a generalization about it?
You mean how you choose to Reiki masters, or who knows what?
Yeah, and also if how do you know that you should become one, or, you know, like some people might be shy and not ever ask, and other people might be told that, you know, they should be a Reiki master like you.
Yeah. Well, no, there's different people waiting for somebody to become a Reiki master for just them, and that's why there's so many different types. The same with politics, different kinds, you know.
Uh-huh.
Different choices. There's the quiet, withdrawn people. They'd like to do something, but they're so quiet and so on. But it's
uh-huh.
sort of like, I realized, I know now what Mr. Carter said, I knew you. I knew you'd come. It's like, oh my gosh. But by now I know the feeling you step into a class, because I can see now that the very first people that came into my first Reiki class in Sweden, I would say 50% of them became Reiki masters, you know, were the first ones.
Uh-huh.
And then from then on, in different other places, I knew, and it seemed to come from the very first class that I did, because I had to say, now look, there was nobody else going to those countries in those days. And then I said, now look, I have to be home. I have cats, dogs, and kids there. And stuff to, you know, look after and stuff. So I can't run back and forth. It takes me longer to get to the airport than it takes to fly here. You know, you don't realize that. I mean, it's 14 hours to get down to Vancouver to get to, or Calgary to go to the airport in those days.
Uh-huh,
and I don't even
uh-huh,
drive, you know.
Uh-huh.
So that, and you guys can just hop on something quick here. So now you have to do it yourself. So you watch what I'm saying. Watch my absolutely. And practice, you know. Sakata was right there. Watch my hands, practice, and then you get it eventually, you know. And
mm-hmm.
through the initiations, they should have all the, it's sort of like one candle lights another. I put the wiring in for that energy to happen, so to speak, and then it will come whatever time they spend, the more they get out of it. Like there was an article right now, 10,000 hours is what they figure somebody that's super good at doing things. They've done scientific neurological things. And that's the same. I don't know, when my 10 towers were up, I must have done a couple of rounds, three rounds in 30 years now. So I must have done several rounds of them. And until then, you know, what you're doing somehow. And the other people will follow along as a staircase, you know. So then you know that. And it feels that it seems to be the way it works.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you just know, and then everybody has different tastes, you know. Some like out skiing and doing a lot of sports and stuff. Other people like to go and sit in the theater and watch plays and stuff. And stay at home by the fire and read books. And so there's a group there, and there's another group there, and, you know, and I noticed that, okay. So I know there has to be other people do things that I'm not doing, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there's a Reiki master of choice for everybody by now, you know, taste.
Yeah,
but everybody needs the Reiki, and they can't be holier than thou people either. Sometimes they have to be sort of strange and outspoken people, but they meet people that we might not meet, and they also need Reiki, maybe more so even, the people that they're going to connect with, you know.
So mm-hmm.
there's a Reiki master for everyone.
Mm-hmm,
I
mm-hmm.
think so.
Yeah.
No, Takata knew what she was doing. And sometimes you don't meet too many people. Yeah, so but it's sort of funny. Yeah, yeah. It was a good...
Yeah.
She lived in a good century, so to speak.
Yes. Well, and, you know, she initiated her masters, and it's been interesting to watch us over the last 30 years and where we've traveled. So you've gone to, obviously, Sweden and the Scandinavian countries.
Yeah.
And Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
And where else?
Well, I did the first person under interesting circumstances. I initiated the first person in Russia. I was a woman in 1980. Somewhere in the early 80s in Russia. Before they sort of really open up. Yeah, I went there.
Fascinating. Do you still have contact with her?
No, I got lost somewhere along in the reshuffle that followed. That was very interesting the first time. Yeah, I know. Well, I remember. I saw a sign saying $500 to go to Russia for a week. This was in the middle of like early March. Dead cold in Sweden, it was colder in Russia. But you could go to Tashkent, Samarkand, where I always wanted to go. So I went. Bjorn went and Chrissy went.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the woman that was the travel agent, travel leader in the bus, there was only 11 people went on that trip, and she spoke Swedish.
So wow.
I took Swedish groups. And by the time we got to Samarkand, she'd ask what we were doing, and we said what we did. And she said, "Oh, all three of you do that?" And there was only 8 more people then, and her.
Uh-huh.
So we gave them Reiki every day in the bus whenever we traveled somewhere.
Well, we have to cut it off now. It's our time. Too bad.
Yeah. So she became the first woman that had Reiki in Russia.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well thank you for phoning and talking about your grandma. I really liked that. I liked her way of doing things. And
good.
The oral tradition she represented was great.
Right.
Yeah. Still works.
Good. Well, thank you, Wanya. Thank you, listeners. We'll see you again. This is Phyllis Fermoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.